it's been fun talking with Joe Torre. And then Mike Massimino, I'm like, Joe goes, you know who this guy is? I'm like, no, I don't. And then he, you know, introduced me, and we were talking about stuff. Like, man, this guy's great on the air. We gotta, you know, have some fun with him and talk to a real life astronaut. What a big deal that was. So that was fun for me. So thanks to Mike Massimino and Joe Torre so far. The first hour, I saw Willie Randolph walking around. I told Hoffy, hey, come on, you gotta get on that. I've been wanting to talk to Willie for a long time since he used to bunt with LaDuca instead of have Reyes steal. Now maybe that's why Willie wouldn't want to come on. We'll find out. But, I mean, David Wright's getting retired. His number retired on Saturday. Come on, we got to talk to Willie here. Be great too if we could, if he'd be kind enough to join us, so we'll see. So stay tuned for that and some others as well that hopefully we could have. All right, let's get back to the calls here, or to the calls. I have not taken a call yet. Hope this call screener works here as we're on the road live at the Joe Torre Safe at Home Annual Celebrity Golf and Tennis Classic. We talked about the Mets and Yankees to start the show. Bobby is in Queens. What's up, Bobby?
What's up, Sal?
How are you, Bobby?
I'm good. You?
Good.
Good. I was listening to you talk about the Mets before and their roster and what they should or could do by the trade deadline. But one guy I haven't heard about is Jose Siri. What happened to this guy?
He had a setback. And I don't know the timeline on Siri, but obviously he was brought here to be their starting center fielder. Now, he's not a great offensive player, but he does have pop, and he was going to bat ninth. So think about it. BT and I have had this argument many times where he just didn't value Siri as much. And I'm thinking he's going to play gold glove defense in center field and be a guy in the ninth spot that could be a power threat to the tune of 20-plus home runs. So I would be fine with that. Unfortunately, he had a setback on his way back with his shin injury or leg, whatever issue it is. So I'm not sure the Mets can count on him, and they don't have a center fielder, so they're going to need one.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I know he's not going to take a cover off the ball, but you know, he's supposed to be a bona fide defensive player out there.
Yes. Yeah, and thank you for the call, Bobby. Appreciate you checking in. Yes, he was supposed to be their starting center fielder. I mean, that's a part of things. Now, the reason why it's not as big of a deal to many people is because, yeah, well, either they weren't familiar with Siri or didn't like the fact that he hit, what, a .189 and whatever it was a year ago. So it's like, he's a bit part anyway. But Siri was supposed to be a big part of this team because he's a terrific defensive center fielder, which could help limit maybe the shortcomings that Soto or Nimmo have as far as range goes covering that outfield. And like I said, for a nine-hitter to have the pop, see, I love Tyrone Taylor, and he plays great defense. Siri is better defensively. And I like Tyrone Taylor as a gamer, but he's not a threat when he comes up to the plate. He may get a big hit here or there, but he's not the threat that Siri could be, even with a 200 batting average. The fact that with any swing he could go deep, to have that at your nine-hole, that would be, to me, I live with that when you know you're getting gold glove defense and bare minimum at the plate offensively is going to be that a guy who could hit 20 home runs a season. That would be appealing. Ralph is calling from Manhattan. What's up, Ralph?
I would venture to say so. That was the first full-fledged astronaut ever to appear on WSAN.
How cool was that, Ralph?
That was fantastic. In fact, I felt like I shouldn't even call because how can I top that? But the 1969 moon landing, which many people dispute, I mean, you have a whole clan of people that are disputing if that ever took place, that inspired me when I was a kid, Sal. You know, it never came to fruition, of course. I'm not an astronaut. But I used to bug my father so much about being an astronaut. He was pulling out his hair. He just would go crazy. I'd say, I want to be an astronaut. He said, go ahead, just be an astronaut. But I remember sitting there as a nine-year-old kid, Sal, watching Neil Armstrong say those famous words, and it was fantastic. It's forever etched in my mind, Sal. You know, when I think of Joe Torre, here's what I think of. I think of stoicism in the dugout. I think of chaos, you know, the chaotic goings-on of the ball game. And he never, ever changed his disposition or his expression. He just sat there. And, Sal, when he was with the Mets, he was called, and this is no put-down to Joe, I love the guy, he was called Clueless Joe. He could not manage a baseball team, but you see, when you have the horses, as he got later with the Yankees, he was able to make everything come into fruition. But let me say something about Joe. He still is a calming presence, and I think that's what the Yankees needed at that specific time, and that's what made him so great.
And he turned everything around, Ralph, and thank you for the call. And speaking of turning things around, we welcome in Willie Randolph
good
to the show
you.
Right now. What's up, Willie?
I'm good, man.
I've been trying
to
get you forever.
Have you really?
Yes, I have.
have. I didn't have the contact. Yeah, for years after ripping you, I needed to talk to you face to face here.
Well, good to see you. Good to see you, man.
Thank you for joining us, first of all. And it's actually the perfect time because David Wright's number is going to be retired on Saturday.
I'll be there.
But before, before we get to that, so my number one thing, okay, now there's a lot of great things, obviously, you did throughout the course of your career as a player with obviously both the Yankees, the Mets, managing with the Mets, but the nitpicky thing that I had that I wanted to talk to you about, it drove me nuts. You would have, let's say Reyes got on in 2006, right? Reyes, who would steal 70 or so bases, bunting with Laduca to get Reyes to second. That would drive me nuts. Do you recall any of that? I'm not saying he did all the time.
Yeah.
But my thought process would be, you have a guy that can steal 70 bases. Let him go, Willie. And it would be bunting Laduca and then the next guy. Obviously, he had a great offense anyway. Yeah. But I was just always curious how you would explain that if I ever had the chance to talk to you.
Yeah, well, David was on his own. I mean, obviously he's one of my best base stealers along with Jose Reyes. But Laduca did a lot of that on his own. I wasn't really putting on a lot of bunts or whatever in a situation like that. But Paulie, he's a team player. He loved to kind of move guys or whatever. But, you know, when I played, we had guys who have signs with each other. So if David was on his own, if he was going to steal, then he'd have a little sign with Laduca, and he would let him go. But a lot of those weren't signs that I put on.
So that's on Laduca. All these years, Willie, I've been wrong.
No.
That's why I need you on to clear it up.
No.
I'm going to get on Laduca now.
No.
What are you doing, bunting, Ray? Let him steal.
No. He had free to go when he wanted to. But again, Paulie was a guy who, you know, again, you get that little single or whatever, whatever here. And then when a guy's playing your back, and he would do that on his own every once in a while. I mean, I called, at times or whatever. But for the most part, that wasn't an automatic for me because I wasn't really a guy that, especially with David on base.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to steal. He might steal third if you don't watch him.
All right. Glad we
That's
cleared
okay.
that.
That's all right.
Now that we're over that. You did a lot of great things. How much did it mean to have success as a manager with them? After your years of success in New York with the Yankees, but how much did it mean for you to get the opportunity from Omar and build this Mets team into what they became in 2006?
Yes. It was huge, Sal. I grew up a Met fan. I grew up in the city. I grew up playing this Prospect Park, the whole thing. So for me to get the opportunity after all those years of laboring through the interviews and all the stuff that you went through with that, which wasn't always real, I finally got a shot. So for me, I was very proud to be the first Black American to be named a manager in New York history. A lot of people don't even know that, but that was special to me. And for me to come here after being with the Yankees for all those years and give something back to the other side, if you will, the
right
Mets side, it was tremendous for me because, I mean, I waited a long time. I knew that I was ready to take on that role and have the opportunity to lead a team that I grew up rooting for around all my family and friends was just the ultimate. Really.
And you did get a raw deal, not only the way that it ended, and we don't need to get into the details there, but the fact that you had success in 2005 and again in 2006, I think you deserved a little bit more after that. Why do you think you didn't get the runway that maybe others would have?
You know, I used to stay up at night thinking about that, and it gave me agita many times, but I just, for this day, can't figure out why. Because when you're successful in this town, you know, and especially when you get almost to the World Series, I mean, we had a tremendous year in 2006, and I thought you had a little more house money to play with, but I have no clue about why, how that went down. Yeah, we're not going to talk about how it ended. That's not even important to me because, you know, this is a tough game for everyone. I mean, guys get hired and fired. I understand that. But for me, it was just the fact that I wasn't able to continue to grow and get better. Because as a young manager, you know, you make your mistakes and you go through your ups and downs, but you get better. How to use your bullpen, how to deal with your players, and all that stuff. So I felt I was climbing. So when I got fired, I was just shocked. I couldn't believe it to this day. And then not getting another shot, which is even crazier.
Well, that's my next question. What, like,
I wish you could ask those questions to the people that were in charge, that were in power. They're the ones that are going to answer
that.
Well,
why do you think? You have no idea.
I don't. I mean,
you only got, one interview with the Brewers afterward? What was your deal?
No, I went from the Mets. I was the bench coach in 09 and 10 and 11 with the Brewers.
Okay.
09 and 10. And then I went to Baltimore with Showalter in 11.
But you never interviewed for another managerial job?
Well I didn't. Well, I had to interview for the Milwaukee job, but they gave it to Ken Maka.
And then you got hired as...
And I got the bench coach job.
Okay.
And I thought I did a good job in Milwaukee, but when they fired Maka, I went along with him. I thought I was going to get the job after he got fired, you know, because I really nurtured a lot of those young players, you know, Fielder and Ricky Weeks and Ryan Braun, those guys. Those are my guys. So, again, it didn't materialize, and to this day, it still sticks in my craw a little bit, to be honest, because I really felt like I could have been an inspiration to a lot of Black Americans who don't get the opportunity, who don't get that second chance, and I felt like I built up enough clout to at least get enough house money to play with to move a little bit further.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense to me. Like, okay, you want to nitpick with New York, and obviously, you know, things go sideways. We get that in a second with the 07 collapse and all that stuff. But the fact that you wouldn't get another chance elsewhere never added up. Now, yeah. I don't know. I'm not in the interview rooms. I'm not the one doing the hiring. But from afar, it's like, that's just anybody else, how many retreads have there been around the league, especially those days?
The interesting thing about that, Sal, is that, you know, when I left Milwaukee and then Baltimore, I didn't really get any interviews after that. I put my name out there a little bit. Listen, these owners and general managers, they know who's out. They know who's in the pool, okay? So even if you don't, you know, solicit or go crazy with trying to find a job, you know, they know. They say, well, he's got a resume, this guy's played the game, the whole thing. Let's give him a call. So it got to the point where I just wasn't getting any interviews, so I just kind of said, okay, let me just get involved in the WBC, the Olympic baseball, which I was very proud to be a part of, and all that. So I just tried to keep playing and loving the game, but the game don't always love you back.
And where, which is not right for all that you put into it. Hey, that happens. It's part of it, unfortunately.
Yes,
now,
yes.
Where are you at now? What are you doing currently?
No, just I go to spring training with my boys every spring, and I love working with Judge and Volpe and all the guys. You know, just giving back in that way. But when the season starts, I just go home and enjoy my babies, my grandchildren. But I keep my finger on the pulse of the game, but I'm not on the Yankee payroll, and I'm not in the organization as far as that goes.
Where are you at with Volpe? You mentioned him. He's had a rough year, getting beat up by the media and fans. He struggled. Year three, young player, not reaching the expectations. What do you think needs to be done to kind of fix Volpe here?
Well, I just think that he needs to just be consistent with his approach and stay there. You know, that's what I see. You know, I'm not with him all the time. We have a good relationship in spring training, but when the season starts, you know, I don't see him as much. But I think that he's just going through growing pains, and most people might think, well, third year should be here or there, maybe. But I still think Anthony's going to be an excellent player. I think he brings a lot to the table on a team that can maybe carry some of the shortcomings. He's going to work his butt off, man. He plays tough baseball. He's a winner. I just think that he needs to just get into his rhythm and stay flat to the ball and just stay there. Stay there, okay? Because I think that sometimes you start to think too much about things, and I don't want to give him opinions on what I feel, but I think he's a kid that you got to stay with him because he's there, but I think you have to be patient with him.
What do you think your greatest strength is to bring to a ball club?
Oh, man, I think I bring a lot of things, but I think more than anything is teaching winning baseball, communication, and learning trust to the players. I feel like even though I'm 71 years old, I'm still...
Are you really?
I just turned 71.
Congrats, you look like you're 50, for God's sake. You look great.
Well, I feel great, thank God, but I still think I have my finger on the pulse of today's culture. Because a lot of coaches, they don't understand the kids. They don't understand maybe a Jazz Chisholm or someone like that or whatever. You know, they just don't have the culture back part of it. And I think that's very important in today's game for these understand the trust that you got to get from coaches. And they feel comfortable coming to you and getting information. You know, when you're in the trenches, I think players respect that a little bit more when you've been there. Okay, there's a lot of great young coaches who work really hard and they're great kids. But I think that in today's game, I think I bring so much to the table because I'm well-rounded, if you will, in a little bit of everything.
Yeah, well, that's why I asked the question, because I could hear that even in just our few minutes talking, and it made me think, okay, well, as a manager, the old saying is, like, the higher you go up, whether it's a coach in football, like, the less coaching you do. But hearing you talk about Volpe and what he needs to do, I'm thinking, man, you could be an asset to help him, not only from a former player's perspective, one that players should respect because you're a pretty damn good ball player in New York, but also from a veteran of the game and knowledge and all that stuff, and teaching these guys, and to being relatable, being able to relate with the players, and having the knowledge to reference your playing days and coaching. There's a lot of value that you would bring, I would think, to an organization.
No doubt about it, and I've always felt that, and a little bit confusing on why that hasn't happened or whatever, you know. But again, I try not to waste much time, Sal, trying to figure it out.
Would you get back in as a coach?
Oh,
or would only have to be like a certain spot or a manager? Where are you at with that?
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know what that is as far as what I would like to do, but I would like to be involved in some way. That's really the key. I mean, I just feel like at this point in my life, I've learned from so many great players. I can do it on the list of Hall of Famers, great players, great managers like Joe Torre, and I can just go on and on and on. I've learned from all those guys, and for me, it was all about going back to, people don't realize I started with the Pirates. I signed originally out of high school with the Pittsburgh Pirates. I learned from Willie Stargell, the great Dave Parker, who's going to the Hall of Fame this year. Sad that he's not there to receive his flowers, but I want to give that back. They always taught me to give it back. Give it up. Just always, hey, Willie, always give it up. Give it up. And so for me, I just want to just continue to give it up. But I'm not allowed to do that because I'm not in the game.
BT and Sal on the Fan. BT's on vacation, which is a shame. We're talking with Willie Randolph because he – oh, BT, you know he's a big Yankee guy.
Yes,
I love
course.
You, Mattingly, Ricky.
Of
we course. Got to get you in the Fan studios one of these days and just chop it up about those 80s.
Of course.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Of course.
All right, so David Wright going to have his number retired, his number 5. You going to be out there Saturday? What's the plan?
I can't wait, man. I spoke to David a couple weeks ago, and he's excited, and he's so deserving, man. I tell you, Sal, when I think about David Wright, I just get goosebumps because as a young manager, you know, I've always loved, to this day, young talent. You got to have veterans sprinkled around you, but the young talent is important. And what a way to step in where you got David Wright, Jose Reyes, two young phenoms who I can just make an impact to on. And so that was what I was excited more about than anything. And just to watch him grow from year to year to year, telling him one time early on that you're going to be captain of this team one day, you know. And if I'm here, you know, I mean, I'm going to obviously push for that, put the seed out there. But I just knew he would transform into what he is right now, and I'm just really proud of him.
Was he – so you could see that he was going to be a future captain one day when you had him, mm-hmm. but he wasn't the leader of your team, right? Who was?
Well, that's why I kind of waited a little bit before I pushed that. That's because I thought, you know, after the first, second, and third year, he was ready for that. But we had veterans on our team like Beltran, and we had Delgado. And then the group dynamic, you got to be careful with that sometimes, you know, because when you got veteran guys who think that they should be the guy, when you bring in a young player like that, you know, you don't want to upset the, you know,
right.
the clubhouse a little bit. So I was very conscious of that, although I knew, and the players knew in the room, that David was ascending and getting into that position where he's going to be the guy.
Where does he rank amongst, not just the players,
yeah.
but I've been asking people that we've had on this week, because to me the thing that stands out about him is the quality of human being
yes.
that he is, combined with what he did on the field. Where does he rank for you? Whether you played with great guys, great players, where does David Wright rank amongst those top guys, all-encompassing?
Yeah, well, he's at the top of the list. I don't, you know, there's so many great players that I played with who fit that mold, so it's hard to put him in what spot, but he does remind me a little bit of, you know, especially early on of Jeter and the way he took the responsibility to be that guy, step up knowing that eventually he's going to be that guy in his mind. Because you can see David, you know, you can see him kind of biding his time and paying his dues, and he understood that and respected that in the game, that, okay, just because I'm David Wright, I'm a homegrown kid, I must have got to jump to the top. So I think he understood that. And Jeter and guys like that, they have that sense of the game and the sense of I have to pay my dues to get there. So that's why I loved about David. And again, I didn't think about where he was at the time. I just knew where he was going to be later.
Right. You dealt with those guys, like you said, both at a young age with Reyes and Wright coming up. Wright, there's a documentary that's going to premiere tonight on SNY called The Right Way. I watch it. It's fantastic, encompassing his career, his life, all those different things. He says in there, if I'm not mistaken, that the 07 season was the one that hurt him the most. What about you?
Yes, no doubt. I mean, we went down the stretch, man, and all we had to do was win one or two games, man. And again, the baseball gods can be cruel, and no one's going to cry over that because that's the way it is, a blooper, a chinker, a slow roller. We just couldn't find that little break. And even though we never made excuses for injuries, we had a lot of injuries.
Ravaged.
You know, just guy just falling. The Duque, Pedro wasn't really around. A guy that really hurt us, to me, is Moises Alou, because he was my leader, but he was never around. He was always, when he would come back, he would get hurt again, and he tried to get back. He worked hard, but he always would pull his hamstring, so he wasn't really in the room, and I think that if he was there, he would have kind of galvanized the whole team as a leader. And because that's their clubhouse. I mean, I'm in my room. I let those guys do their thing. But you need core leadership, strong leadership in the clubhouse. And we had guys who were doing that. But I just think back, Morris is not only because he was a great hitter, but he just wasn't there. And then Pedro got hurt, and just inopportune times when guys went down. We just next man up. We didn't make excuses or whatever. We had guys coming up from AAA.
Yeah,
no-name guys. It was like, what are we doing? And we still was able to hang in there. But it just got down to the point at the end there, Sal, where it's like, you know, there's no way we can lose this. We can't blow this, man, you know? But we just couldn't get up our own way. The bad luck, I mean, the Phillies were doing things and getting away with stuff. And I'm like, what's happening?
I could not believe it. 17, 7-game lead with 17 to go.
Oh, you can't blow that.
And you guys, and maybe – See, maybe if you got into the postseason that year, dealing off the experience of 06, maybe that could have been your year.
Yeah. Maybe that was held against me in some way. But, you know, as a manager, you know what? You put on your big boy drawers and you do what you got to do, especially in this town. See, I grew up in this town, so I knew the way the media worked, how things go down. So, again, was I shocked? Was I surprised when it happened? But I understood that that's what happens.
Okay, you know, but... But that could have been an excuse. Like, I can't argue, all right, if you fall short in 06, whatever, the collapse in 07, bad, the start in 08, okay. So I can understand why maybe they would want to make a change. What I can't understand is you not getting another opportunity after that. I could see a change with the one team that collapsed. I can't see you not getting another opportunity after having that success.
Now, but let me just say this. I don't know if this is even real, but, I mean, that maybe it coincide with the upswing of analytics maybe in some way.
Okay, so maybe it did.
And maybe.
But was that the beginning of – we're talking about 2008, 2010?
It was starting to take legs, I think, the analytics and everything. And, again, that could be far-fetched. I don't know. I just noticed that a new group of baseball people got into the mix, and maybe they viewed me as being maybe a little more old school than – you know, what they might like or whatever. I don't know. See, this is what I for years I've always debated with this in my mind, and it drove me crazy. So even today, I don't try to give much to it because I don't know. And the people that can answer that question are the people that are in power.
All right, so if 07 hurts the most because of the collapse, what about 2006 where you guys had, I would argue, the best team in baseball and now also hit hard with the injury, freaking Duaner Sanchez, the starters. I mean, you guys had Ali Perez going out there, who I never trusted, and even a bit, you know, Andy Chavez making the great catch. Mm-hmm. Anything about the 06 Cardinals series specifically that if you had a do-over, you would do? Any moves or anything? Is there anything about that series that you have a regret with?
Not really. I mean, when Andy made that catch, I just said, you know what, it's over. I looked at my coach and said, we're going to the show, man. Yeah, this is no reason. We are going to the show, man. And I would bet my house on it. And, you know, you could think back on certain pitch selections or certain things that went on like that, but you just, you know, I mean, the people that may have talked about whether I should have bunted with Cliff Floyd when that one time or whatever.
But he pinch hit, right?
Pinch hit. I just felt like I wanted to use that bullet. He was a big guy on my team, and I wanted him to drive runs in. I didn't want to play small ball at that time.
I was thinking hit one in the gap here.
And if I didn't use him, you know, then, and who knows if Glavin would have got the bunt down. Maybe he'd have popped it up, and then now I'm in a pickle now. So I just felt like play that bullet. Cliff was ready. I put him in a situation, and I was looking for him to hit a gap and have a big inning. That's what my thought process at the time.
What do you think of the game today, the current state of the game? I don't know if you watched the All-Star game, whatever. We don't have to get into that. But just in general, with the analytics and the pitch counts, where are you at with the game today?
Well, you know, I mean, they've made a lot of changes, and some of them I like, some of them I don't. We don't have enough time to go into all of it. But I look at what's on the field, the talent on the field. Now, great talent, unbelievable athleticism. But what I want to see more of the fundamentals of the game, how you play the game, how you go about contributing to winning baseball, you know, not only about analytics where numbers get you paid, because when you concentrate on just numbers and getting paid, then you become selfish-minded, okay? It's like, well, listen, I got to put food on the table. I'm going to get my career going. I got a family. I got kids coming up. So it breeds that kind of selfishness where I don't like to see in the game where guys would readily sacrifice or give themselves up or whatever, that kind of thing. The rule changes, I like that they sped it up a little bit. But, you know, the thing at second base, I'm not a big fan of. The ghost runner, you know, throwing over to only first base three times. Those are things that I think are a little too gimmicky.
What about the replay where you've seen, like, as a second baseman, you could appreciate this. If a guy's sliding into second and he comes off by a fraction of an inch as his body's going over the bag, but you keep the tag on him, he's out. Like, to me, that's not in the spirit of the rule. You like the replay the way that it is?
Well, they're teaching that now. You know, they tell you, because when I played, you would get in there, hit him hard, and get out. Because, well, back then, guys would come in high spikes. So you would get cut, but they teach you to keep it on there because the guys the field is so manicured, and when they hit the ground, they almost hydroplane into the base, which is dangerous sometimes. But they tell you to keep it on there so the guy doesn't get away from, you know, getting away from that. I think the replay's got to be quicker. It's got to be quicker, Sal. I mean, it's taking way too long. I was thinking the other day about the thing where they tapped
the ABS.
Yeah. kind of like that a little bit, yeah. You know, because it's quick and it's done, you know. Yeah. But you have to trust who's going to make that call, though. That's the only thing that gets a little bit in trouble with a manager. Who are you going to trust there? Yeah. Are you going to trust a guy like maybe Peraza to make that call, a young player early in the game, or should you save that for later on? So that's the only issue I have with this, that who are you going to trust to make that call?
Right, you'd rather have the manager be in control of that.
Yeah. But it happens quick in 2 seconds, so yep. You don't have time to even make that call.
Right,
so,
it's going to be on your players that you have to trust. All right, so you're going to be out there Saturday at Citi Field, honor of David Wright.
Yes.
And then are you going to be at the Mets Alumni Day as well?
Yes,
you're going to be managing with
too.
Bobby V?
Yes, I'm going to have some fun with that,
Take it, Ed. We're going to see you in uniform. Hey, man, you never know. Go cozy up with Mendy. You know Carlos Mendoza at all or no?
Well, I was going to be his bench coach a year or so ago. I mean, it didn't work out, but yeah.
Carlos, you interviewed for that?
No, they didn't bring me in for an interview, but Carlos, remember this press conference, he said, Willie, you know, he gave me props and everything. And,
yeah.
And it sounded to me or to people that were listening that, you know, I would like Willie to be my bench coach, but I didn't get an interview with that.
I think now that you say it does refresh my memory a little bit. I'd love to see you back, and, you know, I'm a Mets guy. I know all you did with the Yankees, and I respect it. I had my little Willie Randolph starting on a figure in the 80s with the Yankees, but I would like to see you back at some point in a Mets uniform, and maybe we could put that 07 collapse and 06
yeah.
to bed
yeah.
and maybe be there with the Mets. But either way, we're going to see you out in uniform
yes.
on September, what is it, 13th, I think it is, somewhere around there, Alumni
yes.
Day.
Looking
Willie,
forward to it.
It's a pleasure, man. We got to get you in with BT because he'd really love talking
all
to
right.
you for a little
well,
bit.
I listen to you guys all the time, say hi to the boys for me, and I appreciate you, man.
Thank you very much. Willie right. Randolph. Right now, it is an honor to be joined by one of my all-time favorites, number 3, John Starks. Starksy, man, we got had a pleasure watching you this postseason. Front and center right there, baseline, getting in yeah. with the Knicks, Pacers. How much fun was it with this Knicks run?
That was great. It was a fun time to just see all the alumni is there cheering this team on. They had a great run this playoffs. You know, it was just fun getting into it, you know, knowing that, you know, they got a possibility to get to the championship. So, but I think every guy down there truly, truly enjoyed being there and watching these guys perform.
Losing to the damn Pacers again. You
yeah.
know, I got to tell you, I had Reggie's cell number. He doesn't know me from the whole hole, but I got it. I texted him before the series. You're going down, and Starks own you. Well, at least we got Reggie. Screw Reggie Miller. And you were into it. How do we keep losing to the Pacers, John?
Yeah,
come on.
I know. That was tough. You know, obviously, that's a very good team, very well-coached team. You know, they got to the championship, so to lose to a team that actually went on to the championship, you know, says a lot about what we have accomplished there the last couple of years. And so... But, you know, yeah, it was disheartening just not to, you know, finally cross over that threshold. And I would have loved to see that, especially for those guys as well as for the city of New York.
All right, so what do we think about Mike Brown here? You like mm-hmm. the hire. What do you expect to see from this team under a different head coach?
Yeah, I like Mike Brown. I think his resume speaks for itself. 2-time coach of the year. Been to the finals and won championships with teams. What I like about him is that he has a system. He played, he coached underneath Steve Kerr in that system, and I think that system going to fit us very well, player movement, ball movement. And, you know, so I like, what Leon has done and brought in a coach of his caliber.
You think that he – okay, so I guess the issue was Towns, Brunson on the floor together, maybe mm-hmm. defensively. You know, look, you're a defensive guy. First
yeah.
and foremost, I know that Tibbs mm-hmm. is a defensive coach.
Yeah.
Is there a way to fix the defense or make it better, or is it just, hey, let's just pedal to the metal offense with Towns and Brunson being the focal points?
No, I think those guys, defense is about effort. And, you know, and Jalen showed that as well as Towns showed that. So it's just about putting in a little bit more effort out there. You know, they logged a lot of minutes, and that takes a lot out of you on that end of the court. And, you know, so I'm pretty sure they're going to be a lot better this year. No player likes to not be known as a defensive-minded player. Those guys understands that, and I'm pretty sure they're going to come back with a whole different attitude.
Well, remember last year, too, obviously you know this, but the first year with new players, big players coming
yeah.
in, Towns and Bridges, does it take a while for that locker room to mm-hmm. gel and learn from year one? In year one, they get to the Eastern Conference
yeah.
Finals first time in 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
But would there be a reason to expect an uptick just because they're together for another year?
Yeah, it's definitely a learning curve. 1 year together. other. It's just not enough just to get to know each other, tendencies out there on the court. And so I expect this year to be a lot smoother. And, you know, so we're expecting big things. You know, brought in a couple of players, Clarkson coming in, and the kid out of Philadelphia coming in. And so expect that bench to be a lot better. So I'm excited. I truly am excited about, you know, what this team has to offer this upcoming season.
BT, it's out. We'll talk with John Starks. Where are you at with minutes and resting? Mm-hmm. You know, Tibbs is one of those guys who's going to run the guys into the ground, which you could respect and relate to, playing under Riley and Nick Gundy. Do you think in today's game we need more rest for these players in the regular season?
No, it helps a lot. You know, when you got a strong bench, that gives you the option to, you know, rest guys throughout the season. And you know, and that's a big part. You know, Jalen logged a lot of minutes. Towns logged a lot of minutes. OG, our starters logged a lot of minutes, and that's not conducive, especially going into the playoffs if you plan on, you know, getting a, you know, a long run in the playoffs. And so you look at Oklahoma City, the coach made adjustments to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander minutes, especially in that first quarter where he used to let him play the whole quarter, and he took him out, you know, with 3 minutes on the clock, and then bring them back to later on in the second quarter. So it's all about adjustments in this game, and the coaches that do that are the coaches that succeed.
What do you think is the one thing that might be missing from this group? Not talking about player-wise, but just you watch these games up close and personal. What do you think they would need to get to that championship level?
No, it's just mindset. You know what I mean? They was at that level, I thought, this year. And, you know, obviously we got a good break with Boston and Cleveland, you know, and we eliminated Boston and Cleveland going out. So we had the home court advantage. And, you know, that's what's the most disheartening thing about it is that we lost that and having it 2 years in a row against the same team.
Did these guys know what type of warrior you were when you played?
Yeah. No, they respect the way I played as well as that those 90s teams played, and they respect that a lot. And they have shown that, you know what I mean? They remind me of those 90s teams. And so, like I said, I'm excited about this upcoming season and looks for some good things to happen this year.
And that's one thing I'm afraid of a little bit, John, because I loved when Tibbs got here, and it's the one thing that I loved in the first year. They were the four seed during the shortened season. Just it was Randall was the focal point, but they reminded me of your teams, which this city loved, the heart, the defense. Forget about the talent of the offense. And Tibbs built it up, and then they brought in more talent and getting to the Eastern Conference Championship. I worry a little bit about maybe an offensive guy. You know, the comp that I use was Nelly. When they hired Don Nelson, it was not the right fit for your team. No. You don't. Is there any similarities here or potential concerns?
Okay. No, I think Mike understands that, you know, this is a defensive-minded city, and you have to go out there and play defense, and I'm pretty sure he's going to stress that. He's been on defensive-minded teams, so he understands both sides of the coin, you know. In order to win, you have to be able to get stops. You know, your offense going to come and go. But if you can rely on your defense to, you know, keep you there, you're going to be fine. So he truly understands that. Like I said, he's been on championship teams, so he know what that pitcher look like.
Where does Jalen Brunson rank amongst greatest Knicks of all time?
Oh, he's right up there. You know, he still has a ways to go, but, you know, he's been shown that, you know, he can get the job done in New York, and that's what New Yorkers love about him. You know, when the pressure ramps up, he's playing his best. And you have to be able to do that in the city. This is a pressure-packed city to play in, like any other city that you can play in. You know, it's tough to win here, but when you do win, you know, this city is off the chain.
BT and I fight about this. I say Patrick. He says Brunson. Mm-hmm. What do you say? You had to pick one.
Well,
right,
I always go with my big fella. You know, like I say, Jalen haven't played enough. So then, you know, there's a lot of other guys in there too, Clyde and all these guys. So you can't discount what they have done, you know, bringing us two championships back in the 70s and the 60s.
I'm glad you said that because I would expect nothing less, right? Yeah. You played the big fella carried you, got you to the NBA Finals, all those things that you guys had. What the hell's up with Oak and Pat? Like, Oakley, it seems every chance he – like, my, you know, Starks, Ewing, Oakley, like, love you guys. Mm-hmm. And it seems like Oak is ripping the big fella constantly. Yeah. You guys have
I'm not sure. They're grown men. They'll work it out.
Okay. Yeah, I know that's you're not. I know us, the fans, John. We like to. You know what I'm saying? We gotta get it. Yeah. All right. How much did it kill you not to be able to get out there yourself? You're going nuts, man, waving that towel. I want to see you put on that number three and get out there and play with them. It gotta hurt you a little bit not to be able to be a part of it.
During that time of the season is when you know your blood goes up, your blood pressure goes up, and it starts to boil, and you start sweating, and yeah, you want to be in those moments. You know, every guy, every alumni on that bench talks about that. You know what I mean? Wish they could be out there, but you know, it's these guys' time now, and they're showing their worth out there on the court. And like I said, we just fans right now, excited for them, cheer them on. Whenever they need to talk to us, we there for them. And so it's a blessing just to watch them play.
What do you think of the current number three representing you?
I love Hart. I love Josh. He goes out there and he puts it on the line. He lays his heart out there every single night. He does yeoman work out there. And you need those kind of guys, those gritty individuals who just do anything just to win. And he's just a winner. You know, he's been winning his whole life. So I'm great. I'm happy to see that he's wearing number three and doing what he's doing.
We expect to see the same thing this year. You're going to be out there regularly at all these games, going nuts on the sidelines.
No question. When I'm down there, I'm definitely going to be cheering these guys on.
John, always a pleasure and an honor. You were my favorite, and you know why? Because the freaking heart, that defense, you gave it your all every single game, every single series, the headbutts, the middle fingers, all this stuff. We were right there with you. Screw you, Miami fans. Screw you, Indiana fans.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's been an athlete in my life, all the sports in New York, that has represented the city as well as you, number three, John Starks. Yeah, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
We talked to Mr. T, Joe Torre, earlier, and now we are honored to be joined by his wife, Allie Torre, who, of course, is a co-founder here at Safe at Home. Allie, last year we had you and Joe together. This is great. We get him and that baseball talk out of the way, and now you can tell us about what's really important, the Safe at Home Foundation. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having us, Sal.
So 22 years, right? You guys have been doing this. Where are we at now in year 22?
Where are we at?
Yeah, like how do we feel about it? I asked Joe about this before. How do you feel about where we're expanding in year 22 now of the Safe at Home Foundation?
Well, in 22 years, we've gone from helping a few thousand students to now close to 50,000 students per year. So I think it's quite an accomplishment, and I really want to, you know, give the credit to our team, our counselors that are in the schools that are doing the work day to day.
And how much work is it on you? I know there's a charitable thing and you guys love doing it. How much are you doing on a day-to-day basis with the Safe at Home Foundation?
Well, you know, it's our Joe Torre Safe at Home, so we feel very obligated to continue to be involved and do a lot of day-to-day. We built a team of support behind us, which is great, but I'm very active in working with the board, and there's one big job that you have when you run a not-for-profit, and that's to raise funds. So we're very involved in that end of it.
And how have you guys been doing in that regard? Very well, I'm assuming. And Joe said this is something, because I asked him about, is this something you're going to do the rest of your life? But you want this to go beyond even that.
Yes, we'd like to launch an endowment campaign within the next few years to make sure that this work continues once Joe and I step aside. So it's a lot of work. It's a process, but we have a great team, a great set of board, you know, people that are working with us on the board. We're always out there looking to work with family foundations and and we do public-private partnerships with a state government funding, local government funding, that as well.
So more than 20 years ago, Joe and Allie founded Safe at Home to end the cycle of violence and abuse through education. They sought out to create a world where every young person feels safe, supported, and empowered. The values of positive role modeling, leadership, teamwork, and respect that Joe modeled throughout his baseball career mirror its mission. Safe at Home's groundbreaking Margaret's Place program, named in honor of Joe's beloved mother, creates safe spaces in schools to provide intervention and prevention services to students who are impacted by violence and abuse. Did you, Allie, did you learn about a lot of these issues that people have through Joe and his experiences in his childhood?
Well, when Joe started talking about his situation, I was aware. I volunteered as a rape crisis hotline and domestic violence hotline when I was in college. So back then, way back then, it was very much a feminist movement. And when Joe came forward and we talked about doing some type of charity and he mentioned domestic violence, I realized then what a great impact that he could have as a male coming out and talking about it. And that's really why we started focusing on children, because back then there were not a lot of services for children. And there are definitely still services that are necessary, the shelters, that type of thing. In crisis situations, but we found that going into the schools, we've had a great impact in mitigating and ending the cycle with their help. So we believe that the students can help us through this, and the data that we've collected since then have really demonstrated that for us. So we're very excited about our Margaret's Place program and that initiative, and we'd love to see it in all schools. So we're limited only by our resources, and you know, the other option is maybe to franchise with other or other schools and countries. Actually, we are in Tahiti, which is a franchise kind of model. They run the model, and we've introduced that to them and educated them on how to go about doing it, and they're having great success there as well.
And all event proceeds will benefit Safe at Home, Margaret's Place initiative to continue its safe, trauma-informed spaces where children can heal, learn, and grow after receiving services at Margaret's Place. 94% of students say they feel safer. 88% of students say it's easier to talk to someone instead of keeping things to themselves, which is a huge, these poor kids, right. You'd hope that they could feel safe. It's such a great initiative. 91% of students say that they feel more confident and have better self-esteem, and then 95% of students say that they are more hopeful about their future. You guys have done great work with this, and obviously you're seeing the results pay dividends here.
Absolutely. And then our latest initiative, we've actually been in minor league baseball doing awareness campaigns, Safe at Hope Nights, and we now will have 8 major league clubs that are offering a Safe at Home night at the ballpark. So we're able to take our digital resources and expand that out there into the general population, because we do know that anybody can be affected by domestic violence and abuse. So we're very excited about being able to take our data and our information and share it.
And speaking of the ballpark, your husband was back in uniform at the All-Star game in Atlanta. Were you there in Atlanta? Did you go to that?
I was.
What was it like seeing Joe walk out there again making in uniform and then making a bullpen change?
Well, very, very nostalgic, a little emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see, getting all the feels of him back in that Yankee uniform again.
So many great memories. We were reminiscing. It was in Atlanta that Joe and I first started dating. So that was 44 years ago, 43 years ago. And so that was our first city, and he managed the Braves at the time. So we had a lot of reminiscing going on. It was really great.
And you're from where? You grew up where?
Originally Cincinnati.
Oh,
Ohio.
Okay. So you were a Reds fan growing up, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Ah, Joe, now that's the one team he never had any, didn't play for, right, or didn't manage. It seemed like it was everywhere else with Atlanta, the Mets, St. Louis, and obviously the Yankees.
Well, he hit his first home run in Cincinnati.
Oh, okay.
At Crosley Field. That's what he told me anyway.
Yeah. That might have just been a pickup line. Allie, always a pleasure. We appreciate you guys having us out here. WFAN is honored to be a part of this great cause, the Joe Torre Safe at Home Foundation. Anything else that you want to get on the air here? JoeTorre.org, where we get all the information?
JoeTorre.org. You'll be able to find resources. And please feel free to reach out. And we're always looking for partners in our initiative as we move forward, board members, any type of resources that folks might be available that would want to partner with us. And the expansion would be really wonderful. And thank you for always being here for us.
Thank you so much, Allie. Anytime you invite us, like I told Joe, we're going to be out here. Awesome. We appreciate it.